Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome into another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode 53 and part two of our NCAA tournament preview. I am Kevin, joined with me as always, Andrew, back-to-back podcast. What do you think of this format?
I think it's necessary. Okay. I think the people are asking for it. They're asking for lots of material. Can't get enough of these brackets. This is, we say, you know, this is kind of Christmas in Kansas this time of year, but really everyone in the state's kind of going crazy, especially and Lawrence, but you know, it was an interesting day with brackets. I spent a little bit of time with him today. What about you, Kevin?
Oh yeah, I think I filled out every bracket that I could.
Are you a one bracket guy or are you a multiple bracket guy?
I'm a one bracket guy. Unless it's some pool where it gives you some you know, statistical advantage or it's cheaper to do more
bonus points for upsets.
I'm a one, yeah. Okay. I'm a one bracket guy. I filled out my bracket, Andrew, about 10 minutes after it came out and did it just on a whim without thinking too hard. And I usually do better when I do it that way. What about you?
Whoa, gut bracket.
Gut bracket.
I haven't really filled out an official one. I just kind of looked at it. Haven't done anything crazy. But I will tell you about my day. I did go out and buy a new car.
Okay.
And I bought a new house.
Mm.
And I bought a bunch of diamonds from Joslyn's Jewelry. And I spent a bunch of money today because I'm pretty convinced I'm going to win Warren Buffett's $1 billion bracket challenge. So I'm just kind of spending some of that money early. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, no, I think it is.
I'm pretty confident in my abilities to get the bracket entirely correct.
That's a good investment, I think.
I think so too. So maybe I'll go buy a new car tomorrow.
I hope you win. That would be cool if you won.
Well, I'm going to win.
Okay.
That's kind of a done deal.
All right.
Kind of over. Another thing I did today, this was actually just a little bit ago before we started doing this podcast, is I did one of those blind brackets.
Yeah, I did that too. Those are fun.
So I saw somebody on Twitter talking about it. It may have been you, actually.
Probably.
and I typed in Wall Street Journal blind bracket, and then it took me through the whole thing. And basically it gives you like a weird team name, like not the actual team. It says the Armchairs or the Buzzards. They have weird names for all the teams, right? And then it has how experienced they are. Are they good at defense, good at offense? You know, things like that. And then it gives like a two-line description of what the team is. So I, you know, did it fairly quickly, but filled it all out. And then at the end, you can click to see who's your ultimate winner. And I clicked to see what my whole bracket looked like, and it said, Indiana is the champion.
Wait a minute.
And I realized that I clicked on the 2013
I was gonna say
version, not the 2014 version.
That's funny.
Because Indiana did not make the tournament, did not make the NIT. I'll have to go back and do the actual blind bracket one later on. But in this bracket, Kevin, there's some things that we need to know about. People are interested in doing some research. People are interested in our specific pod. So give us a rundown on what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, so yesterday we did our kind of instant reactions to the bracket itself right after Selection Sunday. Today we've had a day to digest and look at some of the teams that KU could face in this first pod. In this, what Bill Self would call, you know, a two-game tournament, just the first game against Eastern Kentucky, and then the potential for a second game should we win against either Stanford or New Mexico. So you and I decided, you know, let's look at all three of these teams, get a little snapshot of all three of them, just in case, you know, if we get past Eastern Kentucky, we can talk about both of the teams that we could potentially see. Now, right off the bat, this is not a jinx. There's no jinxing because all we're doing is talking about this little pod. It's a pod preview. It's a podcast pod preview.
We're just talking about the two-game tournament. We don't want to jinx anything.
No jinxes.
Not doing that, but we want to give you as much information as possible. And Kevin already did the interviews this afternoon.
Yeah, and so I had on a writer for Kentucky Forward to talk about Eastern Kentucky. His name's James Pennington. We'll have that here in just a few minutes. Also talk to our man Mark from the Lobo Lair, New Mexico writer. It's pretty good, too. And then the last one, we had David Lombardi on. He is from the bootleg.com, which is Stanford's scout site. All three of them gave a great little snapshot of the team from kind of a look from behind enemy lines. But what we're going to do here today is we're going to start with Eastern Kentucky. We're going to give our just, you know, our little facts, little fun facts and stats and things about the team that we think you ought to know. And then we'll patch in the interviews and then we'll move on to the next team. So it's going to be an information filled podcast. But hopefully some information that you can use when you're getting ready to watch the games. So let's get started, Andrew, with Eastern Kentucky. What do you say?
Eastern Kentucky, not to be confused with Western Kentucky.
Who we played last year, right?
Who we played last year. I didn't know much about this team. I don't like their mascot as much. They're called the Colonels. I much prefer the Hilltoppers from last year. I believe they used to be called the Maroons. Do you know that? Huh.
I did not know that.
Chew on that little nugget. Yeah, it's a fun one. It's a fun one.
Yeah. So they're from the Ohio Valley, 24-9, same record as us, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
They are the Colonels. They are 129th in KenPom. So just to give you a look of kind of where they are stacking up to the rest of the NCAA, they have played three games against the field. They played at NC State, lost by 19, at Wisconsin, lost by 25, and at VCU, took them to overtime, but lost by 3. So that's, you know, they at least, you know, they have the firepower to stay with, you know, a VCU on the road. So, yeah, interesting team. It's certainly a senior-laden team with 6 seniors, led by veteran guard Glenn Cozy, averaging almost 19 points a game, and Corey Walden, who is the OVC Defensive Player of the Year, who also averages 14.5. So it's kind of a different team than Kansas, obviously a little older, but they have no NCAA tournament experience either, because this is their first time there in a while.
And they're a lot shorter. Glenn Cozy is 6 foot tall, and then Walden is 6 foot two. Their tallest guy, I think, who actually plays minutes is 6 foot eight. So they're going to play four out, one in type of offense, meaning they're not going to rebound that well, but they're going to try to make up for it by just shooting a bunch of threes.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about yesterday. We'll mention it again. They shoot eighth most threes in Division One and second most in the tourney field. 44.5% of their shot attempts come from three. So, and I would imagine, Andrew, I don't know what you think, but I bet it's more like 50% in this game. What do you think?
Probably. So, yeah. I mean, just imagine, I mean, this is going to be a game, if they go in or they don't, it's going to be a game about rebounding and guarding the perimeter. And, you know, are they going to even look to try to use that three to open up anything in the middle? Or is it just going to be, let's chuck some threes, guys?
Well, from what it sounds like, you know, obviously they're going to chuck a lot of threes, but they do, you know, like you said, they'll have a four out, one in, and they use a lot of ball screens. And supposedly they actually do drive the ball quite a bit. But, you know, in a game like this, more than likely they'll be driving to kick. So we got to be defensively sound to, you know, to be sure that when they're getting the ball inside, we're not, you know, fading too much. We have a tendency to do that, which is probably one of the reasons why we are among the worst in the NCAA in guarding the three-point ball. So that's something to watch for as well. But the good news is, like you mentioned, they're very short. They will have a 6'5 guy guarding Perry Ellis. And, you know, our advantage, obviously, is just to continue to take it straight in the paint as much as possible. They have no answer for someone like Andrew Wiggins. So our hope is that we don't turn the ball over, because they steal the ball a lot, and you know, we guard them well on the perimeter, and I think it should be a good game for the Jayhawks. Any other thoughts on this game?
You know, if we can keep from turning the ball over and stop them from making 23-pointers, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah. I think that's a good sign. That would be a good start. But it will be interesting. I mean, they're going to make threes. So as long as you're comfortable with seeing those maybe go in early and hopefully, you know, Kansas can weather some of the storms. And but from what it sounds like and in talking to James, the writer for Kentucky Forward, he thinks that Kansas certainly has a big advantage in this game. I do too. And it will be a good game, at least, you know, as 15-2s go. I think that this will probably be the most interesting one because they have the ability to stay in it with, you know, with threes going down. But hopefully the height and athletic advantage that Kansas has will be the difference in the game. So what do you say we patch in the interview with James Pennington of Kentucky Forward? He also is a contributor to SB Nation's college basketball page, and we'll be back in a few. All right, we are now joined by James Pennington. He covers Kentucky basketball for Kentucky Forward, and he also, in his coverage area, includes some Eastern Kentucky. He also contributes to SB Nation's college basketball page. How you doing, James?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me. I appreciate talking to you.
Right on. Well, okay, let's get right into this. Eastern Kentucky seems like a pretty short team. They seem like they shoot a lot of threes. And some of those kind of things scare Kansas fans a little bit, especially that threes part. Tell me a little bit about this team.
Sure, yeah. You kind of hit the nail on the head with the scouting, with the basic scouting report on EKU. They're a team that they like to take a lot of threes. Their coach, Jeff Neubauer, he's if you want a little bit of a picture of how Eastern Kentucky plays, Jeff Neubauer, he's this is his ninth year at Eastern Kentucky. He was a longtime assistant for John Beilein, first at Richmond and then at West Virginia. And he got the EKU job while Beilein was still at West Virginia before he went to Michigan. So if you're familiar with Michigan, you have a little bit of an idea of how they like to play.
Mm-hmm.
The Neubauer's put his own little spin on how they play offense. But this year's team, you're right. They shoot a lot of threes. They've got some good shooters. They pretty much start four guys who can really, any one of them can hit threes. And they don't do a whole lot in the mid-range. They're either shooting threes or they're trying to get to the basket. They've kind of eliminated the mid-range jumper, which is how they're different than if you watch Michigan. Michigan likes to they like to live on long twos and threes, but Eastern's not that way. They've got some pretty they have some pretty good shooters. Their best shooter is Glenn Cozy. He's about 6 feet or 6'1". And he scores about, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 19 points a game, might be 18 points, something, rounding up to 19. That's kind of their thing. They live and die by the three. That's how they won in the regular season. They finished third in their conference and ended up beating the number one and number two, Belmont and Murray State in the OVC tournament to get the bid. I kind of thought that they were going to be a little bit. I kind of figured they would be a 14 or a 15. I thought 15 was the worst case scenario for them because they're a pretty good team. They're a good offensive team because of the way they play offense. Their effective field goal percentage is quite high. I think they're number four in Division I in effective field goal percentage because they're either taking threes or they're getting as close to the basket as possible, which they can do in their conference in the Ohio Valley. That's not, their size isn't sufficient to get a lot of stuff near the rim against a team like Kansas, even if Joel Embiid doesn't play. But you kind of have to figure they're just going to try to live and die by the three when they're playing in St. Louis on Friday.
You know, that's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, they either shoot threes or they're getting to the basket. The way they get to the basket, I assume, are they penetrating and getting in there? Are they doing a lot of ball screens or just the offense itself other than jacking threes? I mean, do they kind of try to move people around and set several screens and run the offense and get a good look late in the shot clock, or are they shooting the, you know, as soon as they get a look?
Yeah, it's a lot of movement off of ball screens. That's how they get a lot of threes. They try to get a lot of threes that way, and they use that to either penetrate or to kick out and find open shooters on the perimeter.
Fair enough. Well, that's something that we'll certainly be watching for. KU has, I don't know, something like 300th in 3-point defense on the season. So that's not great. certainly an interesting team for Kansas to match up against. But it sounds like where Kansas will certainly have the edge is on the interior. Talk a little bit about their interior. Is it something that they'll be able to match up at all with Kansas on the inside, or is that pretty much where KU is going to have to make their living?
Yeah, that's where Kansas is going to have such a huge advantage. EKU doesn't really have. They have one player, Marcus Lewis, who's he's a pretty impressive athlete. If you look up Google Marcus Lewis, the first thing you'll find is one of the most vicious dunks that I've seen all year in college basketball. He's not huge. He's about 6'4", 6'5", he plays 3 or 4. That's kind of the size that they're dealing with here. And I think EKU's starting center is about 6'7" or 6'8". They don't have a lot of size. Marcus Lewis, one little aside, my full-time duties covering Kentucky, I got a chance to cover John Wall and Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist over the past couple of years. And I've seen few dunks better than Marcus Lewis had in the game earlier this season. But that said, again, we're considering competition, and I'm not sure that he's totally going to have he's the only spot on the floor for Eastern where he may possibly have an athletic advantage over anyone. And Kansas is just going to have such a huge size advantage that I assume that their path to victory is going to include just going at the basket. Eastern they don't have that size. They're gonna rely on threes and hoping to get turnovers. Their defensive game is very risky. They get a lot of turnovers and they give up a lot of layups and dunks.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing. It looks like they're among the leaders in steals, but their effective defense is pretty low overall. Yeah. So that I was just gonna ask you. So do they primarily play a man to man?
Yes. Yeah, it's a man to man. The EKU coach Jeff Neubauer has talked about this recently. For his first several years, they played a EKU's defense. They ran a 1-3-1 zone, this is the second year that they've gone away from that. They're playing strictly man at this point, and they use their speed, I guess, which is another way to say lack of size at the other positions. And they use that to try to. They take a lot of risks. They go for a lot of steals, and sometimes it pans out and gets them opportunities to go the other way, and sometimes they just get beat, and yeah. that's going to happen. And for a team like that in the tournament. That gives them a chance either to stay close or to get beat by 30.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be interesting. Are there any kind of keys to victory other than making threes? Is that kind of and getting turnovers? Is that basically the two things that they really have to do to stick with Kansas?
Yeah, that's going to be it. That's exactly it. Making threes and getting turnovers. That's kind of the way they are. And because of that, when they won their conference tournament, it's funny that they got matched up with Kansas because I do not think that Eastern will win this game. I'm not saying that at all. But when I was looking at Eastern's profile about this time last week after they won the Ohio Valley, and they essentially were just having to sit around for a week to wait to see if they're going to play, I was looking at some profiles of some teams who I figured would be in the 2 or 3 range in terms of seeding that EKU could get matched up with, and who I thought if EKU plays a perfect game, the things they do well, what teams are the most exploitable based on what they do well, that they could maybe stay in a game and something crazy could happen. And because of the way they shoot threes and how many turnovers they force, the first team that I looked at, Kansas. That said, and because of Joel Embiid's impending status, I do not think that Eastern will win this game. But I do think that because of the way they play, I think the best way to say it is this is the most interesting matchup that the selection committee could have put them in.
That's interesting. Well, I can't knock you for that. Certainly, after looking at some of the numbers, KU certainly has no problem turning the ball over or not very good at guarding the three. So, but it will be interesting, you know, to see how they react. It seems like a senior laden team, six seniors, got some veterans, mm-hmm. and Cozy and Walden, as you mentioned, two guys who have been around the block a little bit. So it doesn't sound like they'll be too spooked by playing Kansas. Would you agree with that?
I would say that's probably fair. You're right. They're very experienced. They pretty much have a solid 9-man rotation, and 8 of those are either seniors or juniors. So I don't think none of them have been to the NCAA tournament. The last time Eastern was in the tournament was in 2007. They were 16 and got smoked by North Carolina that year. None of them have been to the tournament. They've had success in their conference, but they've never broken through and gotten to the tournament. So I'm not sure exactly how they're going to play. They haven't played a great schedule this year. Mm-hmm. They played a couple of teams. They played VCU really close, and they played North Carolina State. They did not play North Carolina State particularly close. That was a blowout. They only lost by 3 to VCU back in December. But other than that, they have not played a very high strength of schedule. They also played Wisconsin. I'm forgetting that they got blown out by Wisconsin. But that said, I don't know how they're going to react. Jeff Neubauer, he was pretty candid with how ill prepared his team was when they went to the tournament in 2007. He said he was just so happy to be in the tournament for the first time as a head coach that he was. He said that in the week leading up to the tournament, he was scared to yell at his players to practice and get on them and practice them hard. And because of that, when they tipped off against North Carolina, which it was a 1-16 game, so that game was going to be tough for them anyway.
Right.
But when he said when they tipped off, his players had no idea what to do, and they were just so prepared. And so he took that as a lesson, and he said that he knew what he needed to do as a coach to get his team ready. So you figure with a team of mostly experienced guys and a coach who for 7 years now has regretted how poorly he prepared his team the last time they were in the tournament, you figure they'll be ready to play. Now, to what extent, I don't know, because this is the first time they've played on a stage like this, and they're going to be playing, this is as close to home as Kansas is going to get in terms of a first-round site, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not totally
solid
on the geography of Kansas, but St. Louis seems like it's probably closer than San Antonio or something.
Yep.
So I don't know. We'll see. I don't think that I don't think the moment will swallow them up the way that the moment swallowed EKU up when they were in the tournament the last time in 2007.
Fair enough. Well, it's going to be an interesting game. I of the 15-2 matchups, this one probably has the most intrigue nationally. Looking around the rest. So it's going to be fun. But hey, thanks a lot for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, man. I was glad to talk to you. I'm glad that this game is in St. Louis because that's where I'll actually get to cover.
You're
going to
be there?
Because my duties are first and foremost to cover Kentucky. But Kentucky's in St. Louis playing Kansas State. So
yeah, well, that's going to be fun.
Absolutely.
Well, it's going to be a crazy sight there with Wichita State, K-State, KU, Kentucky, and then some of these other schools. So, yeah, certainly enjoyed. Have a good time. We'll follow you on Twitter at Pennington_JL, correct?
That's it. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot. We will we'll catch you work on there and enjoy the tournament.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. All right, well, thanks again to James Pennington for joining us. Let us transition, Andrew, to look at the next possible game that Kansas would play should they get past Eastern Kentucky. Again, not a jinx, just should that happen? We're just looking at the pod, and the next team up is Stanford, who will match up against New Mexico at 12:40 Central on TBS on Friday. So Stanford, Andrew, is an interesting team. 21-12, they were Pac-12, sixth place in the Pac-12. They are the Cardinal, of course, RPI 41. So they were down a ways, kind of almost close to a bubble team in some respects, although they had a couple of good wins this season. What's your thoughts on the Cardinal?
You know, they really haven't dropped off after Jim Harbaugh left. David Shaw's really, really kept him up. I was trying to do that straight-faced. I couldn't do it. And obviously that's a reference to the football team. And I think that the impression for the Stanford folks is that they don't know much about their basketball team exactly like us, but, you know, come from a pretty deep conference. They're the sixth team out of the Pac-12, you know, a team that got six teams in. I'm not sure if the Stanford fans are very optimistic about winning that first game, but I think it's certainly possible. Some of the analysts, this is certainly not my thought or not my original idea, say that the key to beating New Mexico is with a stretch four, and that's something that Stanford can provide. So with an RPI of 41, they'd certainly have a shot, and it's not without the realm of possibility. They've beaten some fairly decent teams in terms of they beat UCLA, beat UConn earlier in the year, and then Oregon and Arizona State twice. So it's going to be one of those teams that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they advance. I don't think that it's this automatic lock of New Mexico advancing like people are saying. But, I mean, just from what you have gathered over the past 24 hours or so over Stanford, what do you think?
Well, I saw an interesting tweet. I can't remember who it was, but I think it was someone with Yahoo, but it said that the most popular upset pick has been Stanford over New Mexico, you know, on Yahoo, whatever brackets. And I thought that was kind of surprising. Stanford over New Mexico at 37.5% is what people are picking right now. That was from Jeff Eisenberg. I disagree. I think New Mexico is going to win this game pretty handily, but at the same time, you know, talking to David Lombardi, who we'll have on here in a bit, he said that, you know, it's really been a Jekyll and Hyde team off again. And when they're on, you know, they're pretty good. And they're led by, you know, a veteran team. They got a junior guard, Chason Randall, who's averaging 19 points a game. And they got a big man who's pretty good, Dwight Powell, averaging 14-7. Both of those guys were first team all league. So you got two guys who are first team all league in a good conference. I mean, you obviously have some pieces there. So it's certainly possible. I think the bad taste in my mouth is watching that game against UCLA that they are coming off of, where they lost 84-59 in the Pac-12 tournament. And I think that was just the last thing I saw, and I'm sure it's recency bias, but I'm not feeling great about Stanford beating New Mexico.
One last thing, they have a guy on their team named Marcus Allen.
Hmm.
For those of you Chiefs fans out there.
How about that?
Yeah.
You know, that is a fun fact, and I'm glad you're bringing these fun facts to the podcast.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to... Okay, go ahead, yeah.
I have one for you, too, and it's not really a fun fact. It's actually kind of a sad fact, but it could play a role. Johnny Dawkins, the coach, has been there for, I think it's now 6 years, and this is his first NCAA tournament appearance. Before the season last year, his AD basically gave him an ultimatum. I mean, publicly was basically like, he needs to get to the tournament next year and he needs to compete. And they made it to the tournament barely. And so a lot of Stanford fans are wondering if it's enough, you know, this just getting there is enough for him to keep his job this year, or does he need to go out and win a game or two in the NCAA tournament. So I guess what all this to say that there's probably more to this game for Stanford than, you know, just being the 7-11 game. It's a big game for the coach, and certainly they will be trying to do the best they can to give their coach a reason to be their coach next year. So just something else to think about.
That's not a fun fact at all.
I told you it's a sad fact, but it's an interesting fact.
Okay. Right. You know what? That's the one I said matters. Doesn't matter at all in terms of choosing your league. But if you're picking, you know, a team that's got to rally around their coach, this may influence whether you pick this game or not.
Yeah.
That's a useful fact.
There you go.
Sad fact, but useful.
It could be a Cinderella fact. It could be a big, you know, it could be a big factor in the game.
But obviously we know nothing. Let's hear from the expert on this Pac-12 team and see what the real story is.
All right, we'll be back in a minute. All right, now we are joined by David Lombardi. He is a Stanford insider for thebootleg.com, which is Stanford's scout site. He also does some radio and TV work, kind of a jack of all sports trades there. How you doing, David?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, man. Thanks again for coming on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's an exciting time of the year, especially back in Kansas, I'm sure, right now. But all these teams, all these tournaments, you know, you kind of have that break between football season and, I think, tournament time. And then it gets really intense again, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, it does get fun this time of year. Certainly one of our favorite times of year in Kansas. But let's talk about Stanford. It's been a little while since you've been in the tournament. I remember the Lopez twins, you know, being a force kind of just 6 years ago and really haven't been back since. Johnny Dawkins taking over and maybe getting a little bit of a threat from the athletics director. If he doesn't get to the tournament this year, he's on the hot seat. Tell us a little bit about the Stanford season.
Well, yeah, you're right about the hot seat. And I think he still may be actually on the hot seat because there were two parts of that ultimatum really from the athletic director last year. One of those was obviously to make the tournament, and the other one was that we expect Stanford to be competing for a Pac-12 title year in and year out. And obviously they didn't really compete for the conference title this year. They finished sixth again. They haven't finished higher than sixth in several years. So this was obviously a step in the right tournament direction to finally qualify for the first time since 2008. But if you look at the season, it was a really up and down year. They were very inconsistent and happened really in waves. So they had a good wave, they had a bad wave. And when you looked at when this team played well, they're really long, they're really athletic, and they really impressed. I mean, they did some things that not every single team in the country can do. They went to UConn, they won on the road, they beat UCLA pretty handily at home. But then in the bad stretches, it was more the same that we've seen from Stanford over the past 6 years. They got blown out by UCLA in the Pac-12 tournament. They lost several head-scratching games this year. So it's really a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of dynamic for Stanford. And because of that, everybody's still around the program, the fans, but they're still unsure about what to make of the season. Even though they did make the tournament with all these veteran players, I think they still want to see a little bit more coming up here on Friday.
Well, let's talk about that game on Friday, obviously matching up against New Mexico, the Lobos, who might have got underseeded a little bit. It looks like it will be kind of a tough matchup. What are your thoughts on that matchup just against New Mexico?
Well, I think New Mexico's RPI is really high up in the top 20, so I think that it's a tough draw for Stanford. But as I said, Stanford has been so inconsistent this year that I think just making the tournament, they're happy to be there, and they can't complain about who they get in the first round. But if they had a right to complain, then New Mexico would be a team that you'd say, wow, this is a team that we don't want to play right away, because this is a really physical basketball team that they're playing. And one problem that Stanford has had, I think, over the course of the last several years, since the Lopez twins have left, as you said, is they've had a lot of trouble with really tough teams. Because sometimes the rebounding hasn't been there. Sometimes the interior presence hasn't been there for Stanford, especially after they get into foul trouble, because they're not very deep this year. They play about a six-man rotation. Maybe you'll get a couple extra guys in there. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's the starters and everybody else for Stanford this season. when you look at how New Mexico plays, with especially Cameron Bairstow, this guy is big, he's strong, he's physical, and he's skilled near the hoop. I think the Lobos can really push Stanford out of their comfort zone, and they could put Stanford in a position where we see the bad Cardinal team as opposed to the good one. And it's night or day, you know, it's night and day between the bad and the good Stanford team. And for Stanford to beat New Mexico on Friday, I think New Mexico is good enough where that good side is going to have to show up for Stanford. And it's going to be really interesting to see if that physical New Mexico team can really draw the bad out of Stanford instead.
Well, you guys do have some good wins, as you mentioned, UCLA, UConn, Oregon. Had a close loss to Michigan earlier in the season. So that loss looks pretty good at this point. But, to be the good Stanford, what do you got to do? I mean, what are the keys to victory for Stanford over New Mexico and possibly, you know, if they reach Kansas, what would you need to do there?
Well, I think against New Mexico, that's what Stanford should be focusing on, because I see a lot of people on Twitter talking about the potential second-round matchup with Kansas, all this, all that. But, I mean, like I said, New Mexico's a really, really good team. I mean, this is not an accident that they're in the tournament. They won the Mountain West tournament pretty handily, in fact, I think, against San Diego State. They ended up pulling away late in that game. So the focus for Stanford should be on this Friday game, undoubtedly. It's going to be a tough matchup where they have to stay out of foul trouble. So many games this season have been derailed for Stanford, usually because it's either Dwight Powell or Stephon Mastic, their two big guys inside, have gotten into foul trouble. And sometimes they've gotten into foul trouble because of some, I think, really questionable decisions, you know, to foul somebody. And as soon as that happens for Stanford, they don't have the bench to, you know, support themselves against a really good team. So I always like to say that Stanford is one player, one starter in foul trouble away from being in big trouble. And I think that's especially true here against New Mexico, where player for player, 5-on-5, I think Stanford may have a little bit more talent because they have so much length around the whole court. And Chase Randall, obviously, I think is better than whatever New Mexico has to offer at guard. But if one guy gets into foul trouble, then that's where New Mexico will really be able to flex their muscles inside, assert their physical will, and control the tempo of the game. And I think that's where you have to be really concerned if you're Stanford.
Let's talk about a few of your pieces. You mentioned Chasen Randall, junior guard. He's averaging almost 19 points per game. What's his game like? I mean, what does he do with the basketball? Is he a shooter, driver? Does he do a little bit of everything? What should we expect from him?
He does a little bit of everything. If you had to compare him to a professional player, and obviously, this comes with an asterisk, he's not an NBA guy yet, so he's not, nearly as, I think, polished offensively. But I see a lot of Monte Ellis in Chasen Randall, in that he's obviously not the biggest guy, but he's able to, and he loves taking the ball to the hoop, and he can score with contact. He can really, I think, he's really an acrobat when he takes the ball and he drives to the basket. He's able to use the glass well, and he can also shoot. So when you look at a guy like Monte Ellis at the NBA level, obviously he's a lethal offensive threat. He doesn't pass all too much, and I don't think Chasen Randall is much of a distributor either, and that's been one of the problems for Stanford. I don't think it's Chasen's fault. I think that the problem is they just don't have a true point guard figure, and he's having to play that role. He's shooting a lot more than he's passing, so a lot of the time Stanford will have way more turnovers than they have assists. And that's one of the reasons I think that this team is so inconsistent, is they live and die by how hot Chasen Randall and how hot Dwight Powell are. So you have a really talented player that can score in traffic, that can shoot these three-pointers, but at the same time, you don't have particularly the most cohesive offense when you look at Stanford, and that's why they're such a hot and cold team.
You mentioned Dwight Powell, senior big man, averaging like 14-7, something like that. First team all league, along with Chasen Randall. What does Dwight Powell bring to the game?
Well, Dwight Powell brings, I think, NBA potential to the game. And the question for him, whether or not he's able to play at the highest level in the future, is not a physical question. I think it's going to be all about his discipline and his mental grasp of the game and his ability to bring his A game on a consistent basis. But when Dwight Powell was on, I mean, the guy is really impressive, 6'10", 6'11". He's bulked up since his freshman year, tremendous athleticism, you know, long arms, long legs. So he's really able to, I think, go from, half court to the basket in 5 or 6 steps. And his first step is quick, too, so he's able to beat guys off the dribble and then use his size to dominate the glass. Now, that's when Dwight Powell is on. When he's off, he's committing 3 fouls within a 5-minute period, and then he's having to sit on the bench for a lot of the game, and obviously he cannot deliver his talent to Stanford's favor while he's sitting on the bench. So Dwight Powell, I think, is a guy who, when he's playing and he's locked in that zone of mental discipline, and he's able to take over a game, he has the physical tools to do just that. And that's why I think Stanford is a team, again, that is extremely unpredictable, because you're just not sure which Dwight Powell you're going to get.
Fair enough. Well, hey, I'll let you out on this one. We don't want to jinx anything, and I'm not into that. And let's just say, you know, Stanford is fortunate enough to get by the first game, and KU is fortunate enough to get by the first game. We're talking strictly hypotheticals here. But if Stanford meets KU, what is the biggest key for Stanford in that game?
I think, again, it's going to be the consistency thing. Because assuming that Stanford handles New Mexico, then they, again, are going to be running into the challenge that has really stumped them over the course of the past 6 years, and that has been handling success. It seems that every single time Stanford has racked up a big win over the course of the past 6 years, the next game, if it's been against, you know, somebody good, and obviously Kansas is going to be a very good opponent, the next game has not gone well. And the most recent example was in the Pac-12 tournament. Stanford playing Arizona State, and Stanford delivered possibly their best performance with an entire Johnny Dawkins era against Arizona State. And everything that Stanford did in that game was what you would expect to see from such a veteran squad that is so long and athletic. They just overwhelmed Arizona State. It was really, really impressive. Everybody got really excited in the Stanford camp over the next game against UCLA, and they got blown out by 30 points. So one night they play the best game of the Johnny Dawkins era. The next night they play possibly the worst of the Johnny Dawkins era. And I think that would be the concern if they beat New Mexico on Friday and then had to play Kansas on Sunday, because beating New Mexico will be a huge deal for Stanford. It'll be a big win. I think New Mexico is really good. Can they follow up that first-round win with a good performance against Kansas? That would be the big question. Can they get rid of this consistent inconsistency?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I know that. I am certainly looking forward to it. Hey, thanks again, David, for coming on. We really appreciate it. We can find you at David M. Lombardi on Twitter, and you can visit his work at thebootleg.com. Anything else we can hype for you?
Well, it's spring football season at Stanford, so no matter what happens this weekend, I almost feel that Stanford, it's just a weird dynamic now, because everybody remembers Stanford as this big basketball school, but because they haven't been to the tournament for so long, they're still trying to generate enthusiasm on the hardwood, and all of a sudden, everybody's really excited about spring football at the same time as the NCAA tournament. So it's just a weird situation out west, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Right on. Well, hey, thanks again, man, for coming on. We really appreciate it. Good luck to the Cardinal.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, we are back. Thanks again to David Lombardi. Andrew, let's talk about this New Mexico team we have been referencing throughout the podcast as the most likely foe should we get to that second game. So what are your thoughts on New Mexico?
Definitely a team that probably deserves better than a 7 seed. Mm-hmm. They won the Mountain West Conference Championship, and their RPI ranked 12. If the RPI means anything to you. But one thing that's pretty interesting is that we've already played this team, and we played this team with Joel Embiid. And I think that this game was the game where Joel Embiid really kind of showed that he was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in December at the Sprint Center. He had 16 points in the second half. Perry had 21. New Mexico shot 2 for 14 from the 3-point line. And Alex Kirk, their big guy, A lot of people are saying deserves a lot of postseason awards. Only played 18 minutes because I think he was in foul trouble.
Yeah.
This is a game that Joel Embiid really showed his skill down low. So it kind of makes me nervous a little bit in terms of that matchup without Embiid. That being said, we did pull away in the second half and ended up winning by 17. They did beat a couple teams pretty good this year, pretty good teams in this year, including San Diego State twice, including a pretty good game last Saturday night, and in addition to that, Cincinnati. They average 74 points a game, kind of in the middle, but they're, you know, a pretty solid team. This is a team, of course, if you remember last year, was a 3 seed, but lost early to Harvard. So they're looking for some redemption this year. If you remember our preview back then, their team is led by Cameron Bairstow. You know, he's a 20-point per game guy, and Alex Kirk, another big guy, in addition to their guard, Kendall Williams. So it's going to be a fight in the second round. And I think I read somewhere that if Kansas advances into the Sweet 16, they're really going to have to earn it. And I think that that's true.
Yeah, I agree. This is a tough matchup, especially for, like you mentioned, a team that may not have Embiid. But of course, you and I have been on record saying that we think there's a chance that Embiid will play. You think it's about a 15% chance. I think it's a 10% chance. But all hope is not lost on that front. But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. But it will be interesting. Like you said, they're really long. They got a 7-footer in Kirk, who's pretty good. And then Cameron Bairstow is the man. I mean, he scored 24 in that game against us and did it pretty, you know, pretty easily. He was getting kind of whatever he wanted. A pretty skilled big man. He could kind of move in and out. And I was really impressed with him. He and Kirk together are going to be a load. You know, one thing that they are really good at is defensive rebounds. They're averaging 27.5 per game. That's something that Kansas is also, you know, pretty good at. And one thing that, is one, I guess, factor in keeping KU out of a game is to limit offensive rebounds and second chance opportunities. They're pretty good at that. So that'll be something to watch, especially without Embiid. This is a tough game, man. It will be a game that should we match up with them, I don't think will probably be, so long as Embiid's not there, I bet it's no more than a 4 or 5 point KU favorite. What would you say?
I think it'd be a handful, but definitely no more than 5.
Yeah. It's a scary game. And you know, KU really didn't get any luck in this draw, but at the same time, we have played them before. We had a pretty successful game against them, and Andrew Wiggins in that game was in foul trouble. If you remember, I think he only had 11 points. And it was really kind of an Embiid and Ellis game with Kirk on the bench. That will be another key to this game, is maybe getting their guys in foul trouble and hopefully keeping our guys out of foul trouble, because it'll be a different game, you know, as far as going against some height. So a lot different than the first game that we'll play against Eastern Kentucky. So completely different teams. They go through their bigs in New Mexico, and Eastern Kentucky obviously is Jack and threes. So anything else you want to talk about New Mexico before we get the Lobo layer on?
That's going to be a tough matchup. I think it's one of the tougher second round matchups for, 1 or 2 seed. But, you know, we've shown that we can do well against teams like this. They've got to travel, you know, closer to our neck of the woods. We're going to have our crowd necessarily out of, I mean, it's possible that we could struggle a little bit, but I mean, I'm still feeling pretty confident about it.
Speaking of crowd, I want to talk to you about this real fast. What do you think the crowd makeup is going to be like being in St. Louis with Kentucky, with K-State, with Wichita State fans all also there? Do you think it's going to be like a 50-50 crowd?
It's going to matter a little differently because of the session tickets. So yeah. I think that we're in the first session or whatever it is. I think you get tickets for, at least on that first day. And I may be wrong, but this is as far as I understand it. We're the earlier game. So the New Mexico-Stanford game, and then we're the second game. So I'm not sure if those K-State, Kentucky folks, Wichita State folks are going to be around for our game. because they're going to want to be, you know, getting crazy, getting ready for their game in the bars around the arena, I'm assuming. So if our games were afterwards, I think it could be a little bit different. But I think the KU fans are going to scoop up those early tickets. And I think that that really comes into question on the Sunday game.
Sunday game. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking, too. Well, it should be fun. I mean, if you are able to get to St. Louis, certainly get out there. That pod has some awesome games, and with Kentucky being there and K-State, that game will be a blast to watch. And then the potential of Wichita State versus Kentucky or K-State would also be a lot of fun to watch. We will be watching from a sports book in Vegas, but we'll have to live through those folks that are there, those KU fans that are there supporting the team and tweeting us and giving pictures and stuff. So looking forward to that. And hopefully, KU's playing Stanford in the second game. But if we're not, it'll be an interesting matchup against New Mexico. Let's get Mark from the Lobo Lair on to hear a little more from the other side. All right, we are joined now by Mark from the Lobo Lair, an independent blog that covers the New Mexico Lobos. How are you doing today, Mark?
Pretty good, Kevin. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, thanks for coming on. Short notice. We really appreciate it. Wanted to get your thoughts on your team, kind of get a look from the other side. And I got to say, you know, you guys as a 7, that was a big surprise even to me. We thought you'd be a little higher than that. What about you?
Yeah, no question. I think we probably should have been a little bit, you know, everybody was kind of expecting maybe a 5, 6 at worst. You know, we beat San Diego State, who's been top 10 all year, beat them twice. They did get us, you know, at their house, but our strength of schedule, I think, was 16. You know, I heard Coach Nail on the radio this morning. He said, well, you know, if I'm going to go out and play the 16th best schedule in the country, and you're going to reward me with a 7th, you know, a 7 seed, why should I even play that in the first place?
Right.
You know, so he made a good point of that. And but, you know, when it comes down to it, seeding is just a number. It's all about matchups in the NCAA. So matchups determine, you know, how far you go, in my opinion.
Sure. No, yeah, I agree.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I agree. And obviously we saw you guys back in December in a game that was not near as big a disparity as the final score was. It was 80-63 as a final, but that was a 5-point game with 8 minutes to play. And if I remember right, real close at halftime. So what's different about the team now from when we saw you in December?
To be completely honest with you, not too much. We're not much different. I think we're playing a lot better, but as far as what we're doing, you know, schematically and all that stuff, it's the same stuff. We work from the inside out, and you know, we got a good guard in Kendall Williams that, you know, can do some real nice things. And I think actually when we played you, he was probably the best guard on the floor that night. He had a really good game. Obviously you guys know about Cameron Baristow, another, you know, some say he's probably the best four man in college. But going back to your question, we pretty much do all the same stuff. And I think the only difference that you guys probably didn't get to see was Alex Kirk. You know, he got 2 quick fouls on him. And so he never really got into the flow of the game. So I think, you know, barring foul trouble next time, I think you'll probably see a different look from us.
And Alex is the 7-foot center, right?
Yeah, Alex Kirk is a 7-foot center. Him, you know, Cam 6'9", and they're both excellent passers. So, you know, if one, you know, if they trap Cam, he can easily pass out of there, kind of lob over the top and give it to Alex, who's, you know, should be somewhere close to the rim. And, you know, so they work really well together, and you only saw Cam bear sell that one time. So you really didn't get, you know, the full, you know,
sure.
You know what I'm trying to say, the full look of our big men.
Yeah, and they, if I remember right, Baristow had like 24 points, so he had a good game, you know, even on his own. And then, like you mentioned, Kendall Williams, Talk a little bit about him. What is his kind of game? Is he a shooter, driver, kind of orchestrator? What is the best way to describe Kendall Williams' game?
You know, Kendall does it all, to be honest with you. You know, he was a big-time shooter in high school. And now, I think about 2 games ago, he passed the all-time assist record in New Mexico. So he's, I mean, for the two guard, he plays off the ball. For the two guard, he really shares the ball. So he really shares it, you know, drives it, shoots it. He pretty much, he really does it all, to be honest with you.
Okay.
He's a guy that will shoot it a lot, won't make, you know, a ton of shots, but he's the type of kid that will make every big time shot. He'll make it, you know. So I've never seen a kid in you know, all the years that I've been watching New Mexico basketball, I've never seen a kid make more clutch shots than Kendall. I mean, you can Google him. It's just, you know, crazy steal, crazy pass, you know, game winner. He's really special. Probably go down as probably one of the top three Lobos in history.
Nice. Well, that scares KU fans a little bit, but let's talk about the first game that you will be playing versus Stanford. That will be at 12:40 Central Time on TBS. What are your initial thoughts on that matchup?
You know, before I jump to that, let me say, I don't want it to come off like I'm arrogant or, you know, I think we're going to beat you. Well, the Lobos are going to definitely have to play their best game in order to beat KU, you know, beat Kansas. You guys are tough. So I just want to make that clear.
Sure.
We're still going to have to play our best game, and you guys are hell of an opponent. And obviously, Andrew Wiggins has got, only your guys have gotten better. And so, but moving to Stanford, you know, they got a kid from Iowa, Chase Von Randall, who's a really good guard. They got a stretch four man who supposedly can stretch a little bit and shoot all the way out. And should be a good matchup with Cam, but Cam can kind of guard all the way out. So I don't want to say we're too worried about it, but, you know, definitely, you know, it'll be up on the scouting report. But they're a tough team. Coach Alford, who used to coach in New Mexico last year, who's now at UCLA, his best friend is our head coach, Craig Noodles Neal.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure, you know, he's already been blowing up his phone, getting scouting reports from this year. And UCLA beat Stanford by 24 in the Pac-12 tourney. So I'm sure we'll have a good grasp on them. Stanford actually recruited Colin Neal, who's Noodle's son, on our team. So They went out there and they watched him a lot. So he has a good grasp on who they are. That's going to be a tough out.
Yeah, I think you're right. It'll be a good game, but I don't know about you, but I think KU fans are probably looking ahead to New Mexico, and I think New Mexico fans, a lot of them, are looking ahead to KU. So let's talk about that potential matchup, and I don't want to jinx, and you don't want to jinx either, so we're just talking potentials here. But should they meet, you know, what is the keys to the game this time around, you know, for a New Mexico victory?
Should New Mexico be so lucky to get to the second game?
Exactly.
And I'm not kidding. Stanford's going to be tough, but should we get to that second game? The key is probably just going to be keeping Alex out of foul trouble. Joel probably had, you know, he got the best of him for sure. He really kind of took it to Alex. And shortly after that, Alex went out with some shin splints. He missed a couple games. And he might have been a little banged up. I don't know. I'm not going to make excuses for him. But regardless, you know, Joel, you know, got the best of him. And hopefully Alex is more prepared this time. And, has a better game, you know, but I think, you know, Cam did well. Him and Alex working together will be a big plus as long as he stays in the game. And we've kind of had a recent emergence of Sean Delaney, who's our three man, plays on the wing, and he's really stepped it up since about a week and a half ago. He just turned it on, and he's really athletic, and he's making a couple big shots and big rebounds. So, you know, it's going to be a tough game. You know, everybody's going to have to really have a solid game and not give you guys second chance points and, you know, all that good coach speak.
Right. Well, and you guys are a pretty good rebounding team. And that's something that, that KU has prided itself on as well. I think you, if I was looking at some stats, I think you guys are like eighth in defensive rebounds in the country. So that is a huge to keep KU off the offensive glass, and with a couple big men in there that will certainly line up pretty favorably to our front line without Embiid more than likely. That will be an interesting matchup. And now guard play, switching back to there real fast, that's something that Kansas has had a little difficulty in stopping, a point guard. What's your point guard situation like? And is a scorer kind of more of an orchestrator?
Well, Hugh Greenwood, he's an Australian. He played at the Australian Institute for Sports, AIS, in Australia. So he's not a guy that's going to go out and score you 30 a game. That's just not his game. But he's the type of guy that's going to go get you hopefully 5 assists, you know, maybe one turnover, and he'll get you like 7 boards. He's a big time. He's a big guard who likes to. He's not afraid to go down low and rebound, and but he's a real heady kind of glue type of guy. Doesn't really get rattled. In the first game, the first game that we played with you was actually the first game he played with a broken wrist. I don't remember if you guys remember, he didn't shoot the ball one time. He was really timid with the ball, and he was out there and he played, I think, another game after Kansas, and then they shut him down for a month because he had a broken wrist. So, you know, that definitely hurt us. But he's 100% now, so no excuses. And, he's really a facilitator, gets everybody in the offense, and, really just the type of guy that everything he does doesn't show up in the stats.
Fair enough.
So,
every team needs one. I understand. Well, that's very cool. Well, I think it's going to be a fun weekend. I know that. Hopefully, you guys can get by Stanford, and hopefully KU can get by Eastern Kentucky, and we can see this matchup once again, because I think it will definitely be a good one. Hey, thanks a lot for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I just want to let you guys know that I'm not rooting for you guys. I'm going to be rooting for whoever you play.
Fair enough.
I'm going to have to play you guys.
Well, in the spirit of getting it all out there, I'll probably be rooting for Stanford as well. But, you know, I'm actually be in Vegas, so I'll be rooting for my bets more than likely.
There you go.
But
I
hey,
came
thanks
back with a sore throat.
That's right. Hey, thanks again, man. It's again Mark with the Lobo Lair. You can follow Mark at the Lobo Lair and see his work at thelobolair.com. We will catch you later on, man.
Hey, boss. Appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks again to Mark from the Lobo Lair. Seems like a good guy. Hopefully, though, we do not see his team on Sunday.
But if we do, I think we can handle it. We've got Andrew Wiggins.
We do.
You ever heard of him? He's pretty good. All right. We're going into one of the most exciting weekends of the year, starting here on Thursday. We've got a little tip, an email from the Office of the Provost at the University of Kansas. The email goes as such. KU faculty, staff, and student employees, a friendly annual March Madness reminder. Bracketology is fun, but in Kansas, placing bets on the NCAA basketball tournament is fun with a twist. Betting on your bracket is also illegal. This is in bold print here. Don't do it. It is fine to fill out your brackets, share with your friends, and see who is either the best prognosticator or the luckiest. But tempting as it may be, do not create a tournament betting pool with your friends or coworkers, as it is against the law. I'm going to go ahead and say that I haven't done this legal research. Haven't done it. Yeah. But I'm not sure that anyone has ever been prosecuted for running an illegal gambling ring or illegal gambling based off March Madness brackets. Do you know that answer?
I think it is illegal.
No, it is illegal, but has anyone ever been prosecuted for it?
I don't think so. The only thing not that I've heard of in Kansas.
I haven't done the research, but I'm just going to doubt it.
I have heard elsewhere where there were some big money things going on and something, it turned into more of a, I don't think it was a bracket deal. It was more of like a Calcutta deal or something where they were doing an auction and it got pretty big money. And I think something happened there. I can't remember what it was, but There might have been some other activities going on in that story that I heard that I can't remember.
So, you know, you better keep it safe and don't do it.
Yeah. That's why we go to Nevada. So we just,
that's how we get around it. We go to the place where it is legal.
Yep. Yep. But I don't know. I think you should continue to bet as much as you like on the brackets because that's silly. Yeah. Are you in any pools?
I will be in a bunch of pools.
Okay. Any big money pools?
But I haven't filled out anything yet. In case the authorities are listening.
Some Skittles?
No money will be involved in any of these pools.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I don't know. I certainly love bracket pools, but I also kind of like gambling on sports. So I don't know if I'm the person that will probably tell you the right thing. But like you said, we have not done the research. Don't go off of this this discussion. If you get prosecuted, and if you do get prosecuted, please tweet us because we'd love to hear that story.
Or represent you too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Kevin, just give me your gut feelings going into this weekend.
Well, I'm probably going to do a 15 team parlay when I first get to Vegas.
Oh, that'll be fun.
For like a dollar. No, I guess you're talking about the tournament. I think it's a really interesting year. I just recently wrote on the blog. Check it out. I do this every year. It's called the Is This KU's Year post. So I started doing this in 2008, and it was literally March 20th, 2008, when I posted the first version of Is This KU's Year? And then it turned out to be KU's Year that year. And so ever since then, I've done the same post, hoping that, you know, it is KU's year. And every year I tweak it a little bit to talk about this year versus, you know, what's happened this year. And I started off by saying, you know, it's been a weird year. You got a team that was a lot of people thought could go 40-0 as an 8 seed, and Wichita State's a freaking 1 seed for crying out loud. And I mean, you got two teams in Vegas that are saying 2 4 seeds are two of the top three projected to win in terms of odds with Louisville and Michigan State. So it's just an interesting year. Bracket breaks down interesting, and I don't know if it's KU's year or not, but I will say this, that KU's going to have the best player on the court every time they take the court and put on the jerseys. And in some cases, if Joel Embiid gets back, they may have the two best players on the court. That's a lot. I mean, one guy can take you a long ways. Two guys could take you a long ways. And it's going to be a fun tournament.
I think so, too, and I'm looking forward to it, especially looking forward to that St. Louis stuff. I'm not going to be there, but I'm going to be there in spirit. But, Kevin, I'm feeling good. This time of year is always exciting. Let's talk next week, hopefully,
yes,
about possibly maybe a Sweet 16 preview.
Here's hoping.
Hopefully. You listen to that? You listen to that? I'm knocking on wood.
Yeah, I am
you did
too.
That, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
I just freaked my dog out. She thinks someone's at the door.
Yeah, better go bark at that stranger.
Sorry, Barley.
So everybody get out to St. Louis if you can't. Or if you can. If you can't, make sure to watch them on TV and root them on. But I'm going to give the boys a one hearty Rock Chalk Jayhawk before they go out. And any last words from you, Kevin?
One last thing. Before we go to Vegas, are we going to stop at the gravesite and leave an offering?
We could do that. That might be an appropriate thing to do.
If you don't know what we're talking about, we have traditionally gone to the grave out in, where is that in Lawrence? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's east of Lawrence.
East of Lawrence, Dr. James Naismith, and left an offering, usually something KU related, before the tournament. I know we're not the only ones that do it because there's other offerings there. So anyway, there you go. We might have to do it.
Or it's got to do it somehow.
Yeah.
Got to keep it going.
Absolutely. We need the fog. We need Naismith. We need everybody on our side. And it's going to be a fun tournament. We will catch you next week, hopefully talking about a Sweet 16 berth, playing some teams that we will also beat. And hopefully then talking to Elite Eight preview. And hopefully teams will also beat. And then Final Four and, you know, some other things. And hopefully things go right. We'll be talking about a Final Four preview. It's going to be fun, Andrew. I'm stoked.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's go beat Eastern Kentucky.
Let's do that. All right. Let's get out of here. Thanks, all. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Enjoy this tournament. Enjoy March. It's going to be a blast. And cheer on those Jayhawks. Get out to St. Louis if you can. Rock chalk. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing, with no team that's interfering, nine times get the cheering, with them banners held high, and the crowd going.